You, along with my buddy John Couch, John engineering and producing our program. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It's Tuesday, September the 14th, 2021. I wish I had better news about that air quality out there. I don't know what it's going to take to blow some of that smoke. Well, I guess I do know what it would take, like a windy day maybe to start with. Seems like that air is just not moving at all out there. And there have been pollution advisories up in Phoenix and down here in Tucson for ozone. So it's not great air. Let's hope it improves. We're in our 11th year on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. And we, of course, have podcasts that go back to the first week of our programming, which began in January of 2011. So there is a lot of content that has been archived for you at buckmastershow.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Without further ado, let's go now on the live line to the chairwoman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, Sharon Bronson. Supervisor Bronson, how are you?
I am fine, but you're right. The air quality is not.
No, it's been that way. And it's the smoke that's coming in from the fires in California, to a certain extent, some of the fires in Oregon, but most of those are pretty much contained. It's those big fires in California, Northern California, and you get the air moving this way, and it's not great. And so if people are sensitive to smoke, I would advise maybe not going outside. How are you doing? I noticed that the tax I received yesterday, my Pima County property tax statement. I'm sure tax property owners are also finding that in their mailbox. I noticed mine went up a bit. What can you say generally about that, Supervisor Bronson?
I think generally what I can say is there are so many taxing districts. It depends on the taxing district, but I think that the Board of Supervisors, as we passed the latest budget, did it. We were conservative. I would have liked to have done a little bit more, but my colleagues were not with me on that. However, I think that as we try to do economic recovery, we will see that perhaps what the Board of Supervisors did with their taxing districts, and again, there are over 90 taxing districts, will make a difference for economic recovery from COVID.
You know, you think about when this all began back in March of 2020, COVID has dominated the conversation. And I wonder, as we hopefully come out of this in the coming months, how is this going to affect county government and governing?
Stay tuned, I guess is the best thing I can tell you. We don't know. Obviously, you know, we are getting some assistance from the federal government, but what we need to do is a Board of Supervisors. And as you know, Bud, the Board of Supervisors is a weak arm of the state. Our main mission, you know, if you look at our, you know, what boards of supervisors should be doing, we should be doing infrastructure. We should be doing health care. That's where we need, and of course, justice and law enforcement. That's where we need to put our energy and the other piece is economic development. We need to keep that happening. Because if we don't recover, I don't know where this is going next. And as you're aware, if you look at what COVID has done to prices, whether you go to a restaurant or you try to buy supplies somewhere, it's had an impact. We need to reverse that impact. And that's, I think, what our main mission is, to do the things that we are tasked to do as a Board of Supervisors, and to push forward the economic recovery.
Is that economic recovery kind of been lost in all of this, looking at other pieces that you may need to be addressing?
It's certainly not lost on me. That's always been my concern. If we don't have a healthy economy, we can't do the things we are tasked as a board of supervisors, which is infrastructure. It is certainly healthcare, or the whole health piece, and definitely anything with justice and law enforcement. We need to keep our citizens safe, and we need to assure that our economy expands, and we must definitely assure that we protect the health of the citizens of Pima County.
How's that incentivizing employees to be vaccinated? This came up at the August 16th meeting. Are some employees stepping up and going for that extra $300 to the county employees' gross pay and giving them three extra days off, 8-hour days off? How is that going?
It looks like it's doing well. Obviously, we have some issues with justice and law enforcement, particularly the Pima County Sheriff's Office. But I think we're working through that. And again, we'd rather not do this. What we need to do is just get everybody on board with vaccines. The sooner we do this, the sooner people get vaccinated, the sooner people keep wearing masks, whether vaccinated or unvaccinated, the sooner we can assure economic recovery.
I looked at those numbers today, and it's still just under 300 cases in Pima County. I look at the daily count every day from the Arizona Department of Health Services, and I don't know how much progress we're making. What's your feeling?
progress, really. Progress is one day at a time, and it's sending the message out. I am at a loss as to why people don't want to get vaccinated. But if we're going to do economic recovery, get vaccinated, wear a mask, and then we can all get back to businesses. Well, not business as usual, but the new business as usual. So we just need to encourage people, get vaccinated. Why aren't you getting vaccinated? And if you aren't getting vaccinated, please, please tell us why not. What is the impediment? How can we help?
You know, one story that has not received hardly any publicity is that $1 million that will be going to the Emerge Center shelter expansion for the victims of domestic violence. Could you talk a little bit about that? And it's kind of rare when the board votes unanimously, and this was a 5-0 vote, to contribute $1 million to the Emerge Center against domestic violence.
Well, I think that says it all. The board voted unanimously. Domestic violence is one of the issues that drives law enforcement, and Emerge is doing an amazing job. And they're building a new facility. We want to assist them, and we want to stop domestic violence. How do we do it? We're all working through the issue, but Emerge has emerged as a major leader in this community. And congratulations to them on all the things that they're doing.
All right, before we let you go, each of the supervisors has particular areas of interest. But my question to you is, how in the world is Pima County going to fund everybody's wishes? It's not. It isn't.
No. If wishes were horses, I do not know. We have limited resources. We need to spend them wisely, and we need, my view only, we need to spend them on the things we are tasked to do by the state and the Constitution. Again, that is public infrastructure, it's health care, and it's justice and law enforcement. That needs to be our emphasis. And if we emphasize that, we will see economic recovery.
All right, Sharon Bronson, thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks, Bud.
Sharon Bronson, the Pima County Supervisor's Chair. I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, the home of the Danish Kringle, that Scandinavian pastry that's bright, light, tasty, multi-layered pastry, coming in some beautiful flavors like almond, raspberry, cherry. But it's not just the Kringle. All of their bakery goods are fantastic. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise open right now for lunch. They open it for breakfast each day, and they do a great job with breakfast and lunch. And I strongly suggest a visit to Mona's to figure out, and it won't take you long to figure out what all the excitement is about when you see some of those beautiful breads and all of the pastries. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. We're very proud to have Mona's as our sponsor. Stop by, say hello to Steve, the owner and chief baker. Tell him that you heard me talking about his operation when you go by and say hello to Steve and Mona. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the Greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved Regional Transportation Plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail and over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Tom Sullivan here, inviting you to join the rest of us who spend every weeknight from 7 to 10 with the Tom Sullivan Show on 1030 KVOI The Voice.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, without further ado, Mr. Shelley Fishman. How are you, Shell?
I'm well, Bill. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. You know, if we went back and charted over the 10 and a half years, you know where I'm going with this one. If every Tuesday you are with us, and I just wonder if the market would like what that trend would be. I kind of think it might be a little bit on the downside.
Yeah, every time I take my eye off the computer, it just goes away. Well, you know, we had a really interesting and better than forecast report on inflation this morning.
Which you would think, on the surface, that would be a cause for celebration.
Yeah, except you would think wrongly.
Yeah.
Because what happens in a case like that is people begin to be concerned that the Fed will think that the economy is doing better than it needs to be doing, and they'll cut back on stimulus. And so that every time you get a good report on GDP or inflation, you know, we had a very mediocre, actually a rotten employment report last week. But in general, the economy is doing about what you would have expected the economy to be doing, maybe even better than that. Our GDP is above what it was when we went into this thing, and it got there two quarters earlier than we were expecting it to. We're going to see close to 7% GDP growth this year. We're going to see unemployment by the end of the year probably down below 5%. So in general, for a lot of people, things are going well. For some people, things are not going so well. And that's, you know, part of this income disparity and some of the other problems we had. But we're also watching Congress struggle to figure out how to stimulate the economy through infrastructure and through, you know, some other changes in our social safety net. And, you know, those are difficult changes. And if the president gets his way, it will be historic.
Let's switch gears here and talk about something that probably, well, needs to be talked about. Maybe we should talk about it every time we get together. It's estate planning. Yeah. And, you know, people don't, they put this off. They find a million reasons why they'll work on it maybe after the first of the year or coming up in the next few months.
Because people are immortal.
Yes.
And they're not going to die, and they're not going to leave their families and positions if you die without a will or a trust, the state becomes your executor.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people like Governor Ducey, but I don't want him to be my, you know, my executor. So, you know, the minute you get yourself settled as a family,
right,
you need to think about how you want your assets to be divided up amongst your heirs if the bad thing should happen. Now, you know, for most of us, the bad thing doesn't happen until it's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of us, that just isn't as predictable. What's more, your life changes as you go through it. And what's going to happen with your assets is something that might change over time as well. So, you know, the first thing that I'm always asked as a financial advisor is, do I need a will or a trust?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know,
most people probably don't know the difference.
Well, that's right. Mm-hmm. And so the two documents do about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They give, in the case of a will, your executor, in the case of a trust, your successor trustee, very specific instructions as to what's going to happen with your assets. Now you say, then what's the difference? Well, a will is a public document. When you die, it doesn't count at all until you die. But the day after, that will becomes a public document and is subject to probate under the probate court supervision. And so that is all very, very public information. Normally, your executor, if you have a will hire an attorney to help that executor or executors go through the process, because it ain't easy, and you know, you don't do it every day.
So they, that person would be hired to execute the will.
To execute the will, executor, and the executor will hire an attorney who will be paid normally some small percentage of the estate for helping the executor kind of weave their way through that maze. So a will is cheap to do, typically less than $1,000. You can do one online for several hundred dollars, but then your executor has the added expense of hiring an attorney to get everything done. So it's, you know, pay me now or pay me later. A trust, on the other hand, is more expensive to get done because it's typically a longer, more involved document. The responsibility for executing on that document falls to, if you have more than one trustee, then the surviving trustee at the death of the second trustee, then a successor trustee. And that successor trustee is absolutely unsupervised. There is no probate of a trust, and you are expecting the successor trustee to obey your requests that are outlined in the trust, and do so in an honest and prudent way. The only people watching the successor trustee and making sure that that is done in an honest way are the people who gain from being your beneficiaries. So if they don't think that the successor trustee is doing a good job, they can sue to compel.
And it can get nasty.
It can get nasty. Mm. Normally it doesn't. Now, there are some things that are common about the two kinds of documents. One is, you know, you want your brother-in-law and sister-in-law to be your executors. Probably not a good idea, because they've never done it before. It is something that requires a certain amount of skill and a certain amount of dispassionate kind of thinking in how your wishes are to be obeyed. If you have your relatives do it or good friends, you know, the likelihood that they're going to be dispassionate is probably somewhat disputable.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling is, unless you have a trusted relative who maybe is an attorney or you really can forecast that the stuff that you want done won't be mitigated very much by your inheritors, then leave it to your attorney. The attorney who drew up your will or trust probably has somebody in that attorney's office who can take the view of complete dispassionate discourse and simply obey your orders. That person will assume fiduciary responsibility and can't be moved by pledges, you know, and people, you know, knocking on their door and begging. However, if you choose not to have an attorney be your executor or successor trustee, don't keep it a secret from the people that you have chosen to do that role. They should have a copy of your will and trust.
Yeah,
they should know where
surprise,
your stuff is.
Surprise.
And you'd be amazed
upon your passing,
at
how
many
learn.
People I see who say, "Yeah, well, my brother-in-law and sister are going to be my executors."
Have you told them?
We told them. They said it was okay. Do they have a copy of the will? Oh no. Well, what are they supposed to do? I have the will in my safe deposit box. Well, do they have a key to the safe deposit? Oh, no.
No.
So you know, the idea that you want to keep this secret from the people who are going to have to kind of execute on it doesn't make much sense.
No.
But it also means that you have to trust these people with some of your most well-guarded kind of secrets about who's going to get your, you know, who's going to, you know, get your estate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there are ways of, you know, where people say, "I don't need a will. I can do this through titling. I can get my house taken care of. I don't really need to put these documents in place." I've never met a person who didn't really need to, but I've met several who didn't think they did. Okay, so a will or trust, real quick, Bill, as we go to the end of this thing, they kick in on the day you die.
Right.
However, lots of people don't die cleanly.
Mm-hmm.
So you should also have other documents that go along with that estate package. living wills or final instructions on what should happen if you can't make decisions for yourself, mm-hmm. who should make those decisions. And those are life and death decisions. They're medical decisions. But you also have financial decisions. If you're in a coma or you're in a vegetative state, you need somebody who can make these decisions before you die.
Power of attorney.
Powers of attorney, durable powers of attorney.
Right.
Very, very important. So there's 6 or 8 documents that mm-hmm. go in this package, and it's one of the best investments you'll ever make for your heirs.
There you go. Shelley Fishman, always a pleasure. We'll tune in with Shelley next Tuesday at about 12:15. Until then, Shelley, I hope you have a great week.
You too, Bill.
All right. The Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line, is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Up next, ASU economist Dr. Dennis Hoffman. Some interesting things to say about where we are here in Arizona on our economic recovery. Be right back.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than 2 decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, now for a half a century, the go-to place for all your beautiful green things on their 13-acre site located at 3384 East River Road. And don't forget their sister business, Zocalo, Zocalo Village, for their extraordinary collection that they have assembled of beautiful Talavera pottery, antiques, fine art, handmade furniture, and lighting, home accessories, and all sorts of gifts. It's all over at Green Things, open daily. The website's greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. And speaking of our live line, we go now on the live line to meet up with Dr. Dennis Hoffman, who is the director of the Seidman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University. Professor Hoffman has been very much involved with economic forecasting sponsored project efforts include the construction and maintenance of the tax revenue forecasting model used by the Executive Budget Office for the state of Arizona. He's been doing that each year since 1982, and he is a frequent guest on our program, and we welcome him back to the show. Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Doing well, Bill. How about yourself?
Doing well. How was your summer?
You know, it's great, and it's continuing. I'm happy to report that I'm on remote here today from La Jolla Shores, California. So if you hear those seagulls in the background, it's not from Tempe, it's from La Jolla Shores.
Oh, what a beautiful place. What a beautiful early afternoon, I'm sure it is, over in La Jolla. And things are brighter on the Arizona economy, on the economic scene. These new numbers from the Office of Economic Opportunity reflecting that I guess we've recovered 94% of the 331,000 jobs that we lost since April of 2020. So would you say we are nearing full recovery?
We are. I've crunched the same types of numbers here this morning, just kind of looking at where things stand. We've been very fortunate. We have had both a citizenry and government policymakers who tend to be reflections of the citizens, who've been more inclined to open the economy during the pandemic than many other states have been, and to keep things open and to err on the side of the economy as opposed to hunkering down like other states have done, including the state that I'm currently visiting. And so as a result of that, we've done pretty well. We've been able to recoup almost all of our job losses. The mix is a little different than it was pre-pandemic, and we'll have to see how that shakes out. It's going to be very interesting, Bill.
And we are the third largest recovery among all the states, I understand.
We're certainly right up there. That makes sense to me. I didn't look at that ranking, but that certainly jives with the numbers that I have, yes.
So if we are very close now to where we were in 2019, I keep hearing about labor shortages here in Arizona, especially in some of the retail sectors like the restaurant industry.
So that's a reflection, I think, of individuals choosing to pursue other things, and there's lots of things behind it. When we hit those really high employment numbers and very low unemployment numbers at the end of 2019 and early 2020, there were a number of people that were employed in some pretty tough jobs, low paying, tough hours, not a lot of flexibility, folks having to work weekends when maybe they didn't. And I think what you're finding now, Bill, as we've come through this, as people have had a chance to reflect on what they want to do in the future. And, you know, some are choosing to go back to those pursuits. Some are choosing to pursue education. Some have switched occupations. Some, frankly, especially in Arizona, have chosen to retire. And so, you know, how all of that shakes out going forward is really going to be pretty interesting. And, you know, you need to mix in the fact that some people have migrated to Arizona from places like California, and they're now working remotely. So it's interesting times for those of us who study the labor market. And you know, people talk about, when will we go back to where we were? Well, it's not clear we're going back to exactly where we were for a number of these reasons. And I think it's mostly changes in the preferences from workers. It's not anything that, you know, that government aid or unemployment compensation really has much to do with anymore.
The level of recovery here in Pima County, here in the Tucson area, has not kept up with the overall state. 75% recovery level here in Pima County. Do you have any idea why that might be? Some have speculated that there were so many people who are employed with the university system that has not fully recovered. What are some of your thoughts?
Well, that would make sense. You know, the universities have faced a lot of challenges with enrollment, especially with our foreign student situation. I'm hearing that a number of those schools that are have a really large online presence are doing incredibly well, but the face to face is struggling to come back. And again, all that is very consistent, right, with people's concerns about the ongoing pandemic. And so that would help explain some of the challenges you're facing in Tucson. You know, and if the employment mix is more tilted toward face-to-face services, face-to-face jobs, jobs requiring contact with people, than, say, up in Maricopa County, if that is true, then you're just simply going to come back slower, and you may come back differently than you were before.
I was just going to say that you'll be working on the budget for the state of Arizona. Been doing that for almost 40 years. What are you telling? What are you coming up with? What are your numbers looking like as we the session will be here before you know it? We're really closing out this year. And what do you think 2022 is going to be like?
Well, for a number of reasons, revenues are going to be really good. In fiscal 22 that ends next June, we've got a tremendous amount of momentum in the sales tax that continues. Sales taxes are continuing to run 10 and 15% year over year. They just seem to be relentless. The wild card, of course, is the income tax, because we have made now massive changes in our individual income tax structure with the passage of Prop 208. The uncertainty about the continuation of 208 and its legality. If you read the court decision, it's really pretty hard to figure out how 208 will sustain. So you have to do budgeting with or without Prop 208 in the mix, and then when 208 would actually, those monies would actually show up. If 208 continues, the monies won't show up until November of 2022, over a year from now, and that's simply because of the way folks file their taxes. The other wild cards are the new flat tax and the small business tax, where high income people can carve out portions of their income that are a so-called small business income, and set it aside and have it taxed differently. And this is all, it seemed to me, a legislative action to circumvent Prop 208. So it's interesting times when it comes to individual income tax forecasting. And if you look down the road 3 to 4 years from now, I see if this legislation that was passed last spring stands, we're in for massive tax cuts on the individual side. And we'll have to see how that works out with respect to budgeting.
All right. We're going to have to leave it right there. Dr. Dennis Hoffman, ASU economist, saying goodbye to you, and enjoy the rest of your day over in La Jolla and the greater San Diego area. Have a great day. Thanks.
Well, do, Bill, and thanks, as always, for including us. It's always a pleasure to talk with you and the folks in Tucson.
Thank you very much.
Best to you.
Thanks. Dennis Hoffman with us on the Buckmaster Show. Tucson Weekly arts writer Margaret Regan is next.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
This is Kate Delaney. Join me tonight for a conversation about what's happening in the world that affects you. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. The Gila River Festival, it's coming up this weekend. Whether you are into birding, geology, or fly fishing, the 17th annual celebration in and around Silver City, New Mexico, provides a chance to reconnect with the waterway through guided field trips and workshops. More at GilaRiverFestival.org or at SouthwestNewMexico.org, the go-to place as you plan your three-hour drive over to Tucson, over from Tucson to Silver City to check out on their website, southwestnewmexico.org, all the great places to stay and the many things to do, like the Gila River Festival. Let's welcome now the longtime Tucson arts writer, Margaret Regan, also author of two prize-winning books on immigration. We check in with Margaret each month for the Buckmaster Show Arts Report. And Margaret, a year ago, when you did your fall arts preview, there wasn't much to preview, was there? There is this time, and it's in a recent edition of the Weekly. Things have changed.
Yes, things have definitely changed. I mean, the big news is that there's so much happening again.
Yeah.
But I can't even write about all of it.
So much going on, like two art museums at the University of Arizona open. Etherton Gallery made their big move to a new location in the Barrio area. Live dance is returning. We've got a lot to cover here in the next few minutes.
Yeah, well, let's start with the openings of the galleries. Now, Etherton Gallery has been open pretty much like in the last year. I can't remember, you know, last summer, maybe they weren't doing it. They did, you know, stop doing it for a while. But anyway, the big thing with them is, so they were pretty much closed in the summer because they moved after, I don't know how many years, I think 30 years, right in downtown, and they went down to the Barrio Viejo. There's a beautiful place down there that was already used for arts, visual arts, and it was in pretty good shape. And Terry Etherton, the owner, the owner of the gallery, he was keen to get down there. I don't know how often you've been over at the Etherton Gallery downtown, but there were those big steps. 27 steps. I counted them when I was worried about it.
Yep.
Anyway, now they just have like two or three, but there's another place you can get in. And I haven't been in there yet. I took a peek in during the summer. So he is super excited about it. It has a big backyard patio. He's going to do sculptures out there. He can have parties out there. They could do films. So it's really great, and, you know, it's a nice way to sort of animate that neighborhood down there. So I'm really excited about that. And the big opening, by the way, is this Saturday night. If you're keen to go to a party, and I don't know if that I still am ready for a party, but they're doing it Saturday night, and the artist, Joel Peter Witkin, very famous photographer, he's going to be there. So people might really want to go.
Yeah, so the fall arts preview, I highly recommend. It's loaded with information in the Weekly, and that was last week, right?
Yeah, I think it was last week or maybe even the week before. Losing
but
track.
It's certainly available online, so folks can check that out. And why don't we talk a little bit about the upcoming story? You want to hit on that as quickly as possible.
Oh, okay. This is just something I've been meaning to do for quite a while. Not really related to the fall arts. Having been a writer myself and written a book, I felt so bad for, there were a number of artists or, you know, writers in Tucson who wrote books and had them ready to go right when the pandemic hit. So I thought, you know, and I talked to a couple of them, and one guy said he was all set to have his show. You know, he was going to do a launch in the Mexican consulate in Nogales, unusual, because he did a whole book. I should give you his name, Lawrence Taylor. His book is Tales from the Desert Borderland. Very beautifully written book, by the way. I read it from front to back when I was, you know, writing this story. But he says everything was looking really great. This was his sixth book. It was important. But he, as he said, the darkness descended and all was canceled. So instead of all the attention he was hoping to get for the new book, going down to the border and launching the book there and doing readings, nothing happened. You know, everything ended. So, and I met this guy a couple months ago, and I thought, he was telling me nobody wrote about my book. So I thought, well, I'll do it. You know, this is a topic I'm interested in, about the borderland and all its troubles, although it's a fictional story. So, and then there are two women in Tucson who I've known for a long time, Julie Sassi at the Tucson Museum of Art, and Rebecca Senf, who's the curator at the Center for Creative Photography. It's amazing that they both wrote very long books, and they were coming out at the same time. They both had been writing on these books for years.
One of them's about Ansel Adams, right?
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's called Making a Photographer, the Early Work of Ansel Adams. Mm-hmm. And Rebecca, you know, she has a PhD. Her thesis was about this topic. It's really interesting. Apparently, nobody else has really written a big, hefty book about the early years of Ansel Adams. And so we don't know that much about them. And I was interested to learn in her book that some of the people thought that his early works were much better than the, what did she call them? Some of them call them, the later books of Adams are operatic, mm-hmm. somebody said. Huh. And somebody called them bombastic. You know, they're just these big, deep black and white, you know. And so it was an interesting thing to go back to his early years and to see that this work is pretty good, too, but we don't really know it about Adams.
And Julie Sassy's book, what's that one?
Yeah, her book is all about, let me get the title of it for you.
Those that don't know, Julie has been at the Tucson Museum of Art, it seems like forever, and she's done a great job curating so many shows.
Oh, I know. She told me she's written 40 books in the sense that...
What?
Not full books, but as an essayist, you know, people will ask
Different exhibitions and stuff.
Yeah, but this was an actual book, all of hers. It's called Southwest Rising, Contemporary Art and the Legacy of Elaine Horwich. Hmm. Elaine Horwich was a very colorful dealer working in the Southwest, mostly in Phoenix and then in Santa Fe, but operating from 1964 to 1991, and she's credited with propelling hundreds of artists into successful careers. And she was a real character. She wore cowgirl outfits, and she really championed what we now call Southwest pop. So it was a whole new form of art and all these people, and it really brought the Southwest to the attention of the national art scene. So she wrote this wonderful book, you know, it took her 4 years. And then she had a great, you know, opening at the museum. And, you know, 15 days later, everything was dark. And the same thing happened to Rebecca. They had these great books. And everything closed down, as you may remember, in March of that year. And so, you know, I felt so bad for these people that they had been kind of ignored. Now Julie's doing pretty well. The show is actually traveling to other places. It's opening up in Santa Fe in a couple of weeks. So she's going to get a little bit more traction from that.
All right. We are quickly out of time, and you can read about those books in the upcoming Tucson Weekly Arts Report from Margaret Regan. Thank you, Margaret.
Oh, thanks, Bill. Always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, thank you. It's our pleasure. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. We've got Dave Ramsey and his very popular show about money. That's coming up on the Buckmaster Show. Hope you enjoyed it. Try to always put a lot of content into 60 Minutes. On behalf of John Couch, engineering and producing the program, I'm Bill Buckmaster. We will be back with you 12:04 tomorrow. Dr. Trujillo will be with us, head of TUSD, and our monthly interview with Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham. Have a great afternoon.